Thank you, Ryan.
Wendy, I have always liked, and I know you have too, Lindsay Rice from DNA Info, but I have such a new respect for her because she has a tattoo of Troy McClure from The Simpsons on her arm. And wow, that's amazing. That's so cool.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
This is my Simpsons arm.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up obsessed with The Simpsons. Love them. Troy McClure.
Who's Bart is a bird? What's that one? I can't remember that
That's from the Treehouse of Horror, right?
Yeah, that's when they did The Raven.
Yeah.
And Bart was the Raven.
Right.
And I have a little one of Lisa. I have another one of...
I just like in today's day and age, a person can say, that's my Simpsons arm, and nobody looks... Everybody goes, well, that's the girl's Simpsons arm. What are you going
to
do?
Right, of course. Don't you have an arm dedicated to your favorite TV show you've gotten tattooed on yourself?
Yeah.
Bill, your whole body would be tattooed if you did your favorite shows and toys.
What is in my Car 54? Where are you back?
Where are you? I get it.
Yeah.
All right. I was just going to say it's funny you say that because Lindsay Rice is one of our favorite guests that we have here. She's a reporter, producer, DNAinfo.com in Chicago. And your beat is Edgewater, Rogers Park, and West Ridge. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You have such interesting and fascinating stories. And today, are we going to focus on homegrown Chicago type things?
Yeah.
All right. Talk to us because I love all this stuff.
Well, so this there's a new museum exhibit at the Edgewater Historical Society. And once I was kind of delving into what is this exhibit, because I, of course, love the Edgewater Historical Society.
That's an Edgewater bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. They put it in the right
if you
place.
Couldn't tell.
They nailed it.
They really did well on that location-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's this new exhibit, and actually it was curated by a regular, everyday person
mm-hmm.
who a few years ago was in an antique shop in Andersonville. He bought this old kind of like rusty scale, thought it would be like just an interesting focal piece.
A food scale?
For his kitchen. So mm-hmm. it was just going to kind of be like a statement decorative piece.
Nice.
And he realized that it was stamped made in Chicago. And he's like, oh, that's kind of interesting. So he kind of, started Googling around where did this come from. And
mm-hmm.
he was just really fascinated by that history. So as the months went on, he kind of collected a few other things, and he said that it basically just spiraled out of control, and he was far down the rabbit hole trying to learn a lot about these companies and, just Chicago's really rich manufacturing past.
Yeah.
It was interesting because he was saying that most people, it was actually kind of difficult, even though some of these companies are really well known, because people have a tendency to not be taking pictures of their workplace, thinking in the moment, oh, this could be interesting 50, 70 years from now.
And there were no iPhones.
Right. So, it was a lot more of an endeavor to take a photo and to do those that kind of documentation.
Yeah.
Normally people take pictures of things like when they're finally done with work and, they're out living their lives.
Right, sure.
So eventually, over the past 2 years, he's amassed like 200 pieces of things that were all just sitting in his one-bedroom apartment. And he was saying, his friends knew something was going on when they would come over. And he made what he called the Made in Chicago Museum.
How cool.
It was basically a digital museum where he has great photographs, long descriptive features on the history of these with great photos, advertisements. He's made an excellent map that, maps a lot of where these places were all across the city.
Mm-hmm.
And they're now on display. They have a home, a temporary home, for the next year at the Edgewater Historical Society.
Where is that? I know I joke and say it's in Edgewater, but do we have an address for that?
Yeah, it's 5358 North Ashland Avenue.
I have to see that. I have something that he may want, although I don't know that I'm going to part with it. Again, went to an antique store, and I have lawn ornaments in my garden, and there is one of those old sprinklers that's made of wrought iron and just like one little bar that spins around, and it says some water company, Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, yeah. He would be really interested in that, I'm sure.
All right.
I mean, there's so many just...
$1 million.
That seems like a fair price, Wendy. Yeah, get $1 million for it.
I mean,
perfect.
His stuff, it really centers around like everyday life.
Yeah.
So it has, you know, globes and tools and kitchen items, you know, attire, different things like that. One item that I found particularly interesting was the history of Maybelline in Chicago, the, you know, international
cosmetics
makeup company today. Mm-hmm. He has some of the original Maybelline tins. It was like a
powder came in it?
Yeah, it was like a powder, kind of like a black powder, or some of them were a little creamier, and it had like a little brush. He has those there, and that has its own incredible history, for which I fell down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So I totally get where this guy's coming from.
Maybelline started in Chicago. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, in Edgewater, actually. And
that's Maybeline.
Isn't it Maybeline? Is that, is that
maybe,
their phrase?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Isn't it Maybeline?
How do you know that?
I'm a consumer.
Maybe it's
Wendy.
Maybeline.
Maybe it's Maybeline. It might be Maybeline. I know Maybelline, of course, is still up and running and doing well, but a lot of these companies, I'm guessing, are fallen away. They're not around anymore, are they?
Yeah, a lot of them, you know, just technology changing, industries changing. You know, Maybelline, for example, it started in 1915, and its founder was a closeted gay man, and he started this company after seeing his sister, whose name is Mabel, accidentally have a tragic over-bleaching accident. So her, you know...
That's terrible.
Would pray for her, but her eyelashes, her eyebrows were really light, and she had
lean.
Kind of... Yeah.
That's why.
They were kind of like invisible. She had made this concoction of like Vaseline and coal powder.
Oh, no.
And he saw her applying that one day and was like, is there a market for this?
He did all right.
Yeah,
because I look like James Spader if I don't wear mascara.
Right.
I really do.
Right.
So he just took that idea. He ran with it. He made this company. And actually, in Edgewater, the building that it was housed in for over 50 years still has a cursive M.
Oh, really?
For Maybelline.
Yeah, and, you know, above the door.
Even though they're no longer the inhabitants of the building, right? They've moved
right.
on, but the wow, that's great.
Whatever happened to Maybelline? Kidding. Great Lash is always like one of the number one top mascaras, even though other companies sell mascara that's five times as much. They always say in like models' goodie bags and stuff, they always look back to Great Lash by Maybelline.
Yeah, the classic, you know, that's the one I like.
Pink and green.
Pink and green, exactly. You can't go wrong with the pink and green.
And Wendy, what was the Wacky Packages version of Maybelline? Do you remember?
No, but evidently you do.
That was a cow with her eyelashes being done up with Maybelline. One of the best Wacky Packages of all time.
You should bring that back. I know they have made a comeback, but they need to be funnier. So you should write for them.
I will do that. That's my goal. Yep. All right. Let's take a quick break and then more discussion with Lindsay Rice from DNA Info. If you want to join in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. Lindsay Rice is here, reporter, producer with DNAinfo.com here in Chicago. The Made in Chicago Museum is something we were talking about earlier. It was just originally digital, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you can go to the Edgewater Historical Society, 5338 North Ashland.
5358 North Ashland.
5358. And check out some of these things. You had talked about the originator of Maybelline mascara. I can't help but think about where it began with putting Vaseline on your eyelashes and then coal powder to like squeeze it on there to make them look darker. It would have smeared all over the place.
Right, right. Which is already a problem enough as it is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there'd probably be an aroma from the coal powder, I'm guessing, right? Wouldn't there be a slight...
Hey, smoky?
Maybe that's where the term smoky eye came from.
Isn't that? I bet that's true.
Yes, I don't know. Let's say yes.
Yeah, let's go with it.
All right, so what's the name of the guy who invented this because his sister was putting the Vaseline in coal? His name?
His name was Thomas Lyle Williams. And his great-niece, Sherry Williams... She has done a lot of research on the family history, and I spoke with her. She wrote a book a few years ago all about the Maybelline history, and one of the reasons that she did it was to really give her great-uncle's legacy kind of
The props that
right,
it deserved.
Right, exactly. The oomph that it deserves.
Yeah.
And one reason in particular was, as I had mentioned, he was in the closet. He was gay. He had a longtime partner who was kind of this advertising genius. Together, they grew this company. And Maybelline started in 1915. So as it was growing in the 20s, you know, that especially in Chicago, it was a very dramatic time. You know, you got jazz, flappers, and Edgewater was this really opulent area with the Edgewater Beach Hotel and kind of like where, you know, ritziness and glam was like happening all the time. So it was really easy for him to, you know, sort of blend in a sense. He was very fashionable. He even wore makeup sometimes. And it wasn't a huge deal because a lot of people, you know, were flashy as well.
Guys, though, were guys doing that back then?
I think men were a lot more fashionable at the time. You know, wearing hats, coats, you know, nice suits with different fabrics and stuff like that. Yeah. Maybe not all wearing makeup, but maybe some.
People with blonde eyelashes, trust me, you need it.
Yeah, right, yeah. So when the Great Depression hit, That was a turning point for him and for the company because it was not easy to be out then. It was almost impossible to be out and especially be successful and be out. And he really didn't want to be anything other than himself.
Yeah.
You know, he still wanted to express himself the way that he felt comfortable and was authentic to him. So, but it was really standing out.
Yeah.
And in a time where people were desperate for money, you know, it's calling attention to how rich his family is. And it was putting them in danger for not just him being gay, but also having money. So he and his partner and some of the family who were involved with the business, they packed up and moved to Hollywood. They bought this beautiful house with a pool and, you know, just surrounded by trees. And it was so much easier for him there because he really revolutionized advertising, especially cosmetics advertising, by using Hollywood starlets to, you know, be the face, the literal face of Maybelline. And
to
he could kind of
it.
Like stand in the shadows.
Yeah.
You know, so you'd open a newspaper or a magazine or, you know, an ad at wherever. And there's like a paragraph about describing Maybelline and why every woman needs it. And then you, you know, see these beautiful, iconic faces that normally you would only see in a silver screen. But that even goes back to Maybelline's origins, where when he saw what his sister was wearing, the dark makeup, that was really only something that people had been seeing in, you know, like silent films and things like that, you know, to pronounce facial features and things like that, but you didn't see it so much in everyday use.
Yeah.
So he really, with the inspiration of his sister, popularized that a lot.
And I got to write him a thank you note for his ancestors.
Might be too late.
Yeah, I know.
He really was an LGBT kind of pioneer of industry in his time, though didn't have that recognition. You know, but of course, as many other LGBT pioneers and other types of pioneers, you know. Same. But, you know, now it's June. It's Pride Month. It was just a really nice story to draw attention to his incredible contributions to beauty.
Real quick, you mentioned the Edgewater Beach Hotel, and I have seen, and I'm sure you've seen the same posters I have, posters from like the 1920s and 1930s where the Edgewater Beach Hotel really looks like it's out of Miami, Florida. It has this tropical look. You wouldn't associate it with Chicago because we only have that kind of weather a couple months.
Right.
But those pictures just made it look like a palace and almost like a southern palace. It had quite a reputation back then, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was amazing. And it really put the neighborhood on the map.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a destination for athletes, politicians, movie stars. Martin Luther King Jr. spoke there.
Yeah.
So many amazing people throughout the years. And like many things, you know, it had a deterioration over time, which a lot of it had to do with the expansion of Lakeshore Drive in the 50s, kind of cutting off their private beach, which was a huge draw.
They reconfigured that whole beach area, didn't they?
Right, yeah. So that changed it a lot. Then they had a private pool, and it just wasn't the same. But the hotel itself was just such so an amazing opulent. Thing. Yeah. And it really was like out of another state
Beautiful.
Altogether.
All right. She's Lindsay Rice. She's with DNAinfo.com. And how do we read about this? Also, Zenith is another company that just began. We only have 30 seconds here, but it was a tiny little shack that sold electronics.
It started in a kitchen between two friends who had been in the Navy, and then the Edgewater Beach Hotel allowed it to use this itty bitty literal radio shack on its property to have a little space to manufacture electronics and also have a little satellite. And of course now it's this international company owned by LG, so it's just
It's amazing, man. And we all owe it to Chicago. How can we read more about everything you've put together? She's Lindsay Rice, by the way.
You can go to DNAinfo.com/Chicago.
And follow her on Twitter, Lindsay Rice, LINZERICE. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, guys.
Thanks, Lindsay. Appreciate it. We'll take a quick break. We have news next and then more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.